Pat Conroy's masterpiece has captivated millions with its raw emotional power since its publication in 1986. Oprah Winfrey called it one of the most haunting books I've ever read, while Stephen King praised it as a big, sprawling novel of pain and healing. The book spent nearly a year on the New York Times bestseller list and was adapted into an Oscar-nominated film starring Barbara Streisand and Nick Nolte. Beyond its commercial success, The Prince of Tides explores universal themes of family trauma, memory, and redemption that continue to resonate with readers across generations. What makes this novel extraordinary is how Conroy transforms his own troubled childhood into a searing exploration of how we carry and sometimes overcome the wounds of our past. Tom Wingo's opening declaration, "My wound is geography," establishes the profound connection between place and identity that runs throughout the novel. The Wingo family story unfolds in the marshes and tides of fictional Colleton County, South Carolina, where the natural world serves as both sanctuary and witness to their traumas. For Tom, the landscape itself has shaped his character. "It is also my anchorage, my port of call." The Wingos are a family defined by contradiction, capable of extraordinary love yet damaged by cycles of violence. Henry Wingo, the father, embodies this duality perfectly. On his shrimp boat, he becomes a different man, competent, respected, and even gentle with his children. "Only on the river were we safe with him," Tom reflects. "Only there did he treat us with dignity as workers, brothers of the nets." Yet on land, Henry's Saddam touch, Midas spelled backward, leads to failed business ventures and explosive violence against his family. Lila Wingo, the mother, presents herself as refined and cultured despite her humble origins. She revises her own history, transforming her drunkard father into a successful banker ruined by the Depression. Her ambition and social climbing create a household built on deception. More disturbingly, she manipulates her children by taking each one into her confidence separately, telling they alone can be trusted. "By dividing us with these private confessions," Tom explains, "she established control over all three children, leaving herself impregnable, the softest enigma in our lives." The three Wingo siblings respond differently to this volatile upbringing. Luke becomes the warrior, channeling his father's strength while rejecting his cruelty. Savannah develops extraordinary sensitivity and creativity, but suffers psychological fragility. Tom positions himself as the mediator, the normal one, whose apparent stability masks deep wounds. Their grandmother, Talitha, describes them perfectly. Luke, the fanatic. Tom, the failure. Savannah, the lunatic. Memory, both preserved and suppressed, forms the novel's central tension. Savannah suffers from white intervals, periods where her memories vanish completely, leaving haunting gaps in her consciousness. "I had no memory of bringing Rose Astor to my bed," she confesses to Tom as a child, her voice trembling with uncertainty. "This has been happening to me. Whole days and incidents disappear." These episodes occur with increasing frequency throughout her adolescence, leading her to beg Tom to become the twin that remembers, while she meticulously keeps journals to document her experiences, fragments of paper that become her external memory. Tom, meanwhile, employs a different strategy, avoiding confrontation with his childhood traumas through strategic forgetting. "For years, I avoided the truth about my childhood, finding refuge in forgetfulness," he admits. His selective amnesia serves as both shield and prison, protecting him from pain while preventing genuine healing. When Savannah attempts suicide in her New York apartment, Tom must painfully excavate their shared past to help her psychiatrist, Dr. Lowenstein, understand the origins of her breakdown. This process forces Tom to confront memories he has long suppressed, including countless nights hiding under beds from their father's rage, and moments of desperate solidarity with Savannah. The novel suggests that memory itself can be both poison and medicine, a double-edged sword that can either heal or destroy. When Tom finally reveals the central trauma of their childhood, the horrific day three escaped convicts invaded their home and sexually assaulted Tom, Savannah, and their mother, he describes how their mother forced them into a suffocating pact of silence. "We honor this pact of denial," Tom explains, "never speaking of it even among ourselves." This enforced forgetting becomes a second trauma, driving Savannah toward madness, while Tom retreats into emotional numbness, seeking refuge in academic achievement and physical distance from his family. Conroy brilliantly illustrates how family narratives are constructed and maintained through selective remembering, creating a complex tapestry of truth and denial. When Tom confronts his father about his violence, Henry genuinely claims not to remember beating his family. "I don't remember any of that. I must have been drunk." The power to define what is remembered becomes a form of control within the family system, with each member cultivating their version of events. This selective memory serves different purposes: protection for some, denial for others, and survival for all. Through carefully placed flashbacks and revelations, Conroy shows how the Wingo family's collective memory becomes a battlefield where the past is constantly being rewritten, challenged, and suppressed, with devastating consequences for all involved. The theme of memory weaves through every relationship in the novel, from Luke's heroic death that Tom refuses to forget, to their mother's carefully curated version of their childhood that omits all traces of violence and trauma. Each character's relationship with the past becomes a key to understanding their present struggles and future possibilities. Throughout the novel, Conroy masterfully dissects what he calls the Southern Way, the intricate and often contradictory cultural codes that govern life in the American South. The Wingos inhabit a society where appearances matter so deeply that even the smallest social slight can trigger generational vendettas, where social hierarchies are as rigid as cathedral walls, and where history weighs on the present like humid air on a July afternoon. The rejection of Tom's mother by the prestigious Colleton League Cookbook Committee serves as a perfect crystallization of these social dynamics. The committee, composed of the town's elite women, doesn't merely decline her recipes, they reject her entire claim to social belonging. Her response to their later charitable gesture becomes legendary in family lore. When league ladies bring a Thanksgiving turkey, ostensibly as charity but truly as a reminder of social hierarchy, she responds with theatrical defiance. Standing in her yard, she blasts the turkey to pieces with her shotgun, turning to her wide-eyed children and declaring, "Remember what they're all like, children. Remember every damn one of their faces." This performance of defiance exemplifies what Tom calls the Wingo family's jaunty plumage, their reflexive transformation of humiliation into spectacular acts of rebellion. The novel unflinchingly confronts the South's racial tensions, particularly through the story of Benji Washington's integration of Colleton High School in the early 1960s. Benji's daily walk through silent, hostile hallways, where hatred prowled the halls like an invisible gas, becomes a powerful metaphor for the broader struggle for civil rights. Yet Conroy complicates this narrative by showing how Benji's extraordinary athletic ability gradually reshapes the community's racial attitudes. During a pivotal football game where opposing fans shower the field with racial slurs, Benji's breathtaking performance, scoring touchdown after touchdown, forces a reluctant admiration. The crowd's transformation from hatred to celebration reveals both the superficiality of their prejudice and the complex ways in which change occurs in Southern society. The character of Mr. Fruit embodies another fascinating dimension of the Southern Way. As the town's beloved black traffic director, whose possible intellectual disability is never directly addressed, he represents the South's complicated relationship with difference. The community's embrace of his elaborate, unnecessary traffic directing performances, complete with pirouettes and theatrical flourishes, reveals both tolerance and condescension. As Tom's grandmother explains without irony, that's the Southern way. That's the nice way. This accommodation of difference, while seemingly benevolent, carries troubling undertones of patronization and control, reflecting the South's historical pattern of managing racial and social differences through carefully prescribed roles and behaviors. These intersecting stories reveal how Southern society maintains its stability through an elaborate dance of pride, performance, and prejudice, where social transgressions are met with theatrical responses, where change comes through unexpected channels, and where acceptance often masks deeper forms of control. The Prince of Tides presents a nuanced exploration of masculinity across generations, weaving together complex portraits of men struggling to define themselves against inherited patterns. Tom's grandfather Amos represents a gentle, spiritual manhood rooted in faith and kindness. Though his religious fervor embarrasses his family, particularly his annual Good Friday ritual of carrying a cross through town while singing hymns, Amos never raises his hand in anger. His quiet strength manifests in small acts of compassion, tending to injured animals, teaching children to read, offering food to strangers. Tom later regrets not appreciating his grandfather's sanctity and innocence, wishing he could have witnessed the world with eyes incapable of anything but wonder. Amos's legacy suggests that true strength lies in gentleness rather than force. Henry Wingo embodies a toxic masculinity characterized by violence and domination, shaped by his own wounds from childhood neglect. Having felt invisible as a child himself, he considers a slap to the face a valentine delivered and measures his worth through displays of power. His love for his children is awkward and deviant, expressed through control rather than tenderness. He demands perfection in sports, belittles their achievements, and uses fear as his primary parenting tool. Yet Conroy resists making Henry a simple villain. He also shows his vulnerability in quiet moments, his hands trembling when he tries to comfort his wife, his desperate need for approval from his own father, and his genuine love for Lila despite his inability to express it healthily. His complexity reveals how trauma perpetuates itself across generations. Tom struggles to define his own masculinity against these contradictory models, constantly navigating between gentleness and strength. As a football coach, he tries to teach boys that losing well offered wisdom, while winning well built authentic manhood. He emphasizes sportsmanship over victory, character over dominance. Yet his marriage to Sally reveals his emotional limitations, his tendency to withdraw during difficult times, to use humor as a shield against intimacy, to repeat some of his father's patterns despite his conscious rejection of them. When Sally confronts him about his emotional distance, she laments, "I don't know what happened to the fighter I married." His journey involves recognizing how deeply ingrained these patterns are and actively choosing a different path. Luke represents yet another version of masculinity, the warrior who channels aggression into protection rather than domination. His extraordinary bond with Caesar the Tiger reveals his capacity for patience and gentleness despite his physical strength. He spends hours gaining the animal's trust, showing that true power lies in earning respect rather than demanding it. Later, when he returns from Vietnam with medals for heroism, he expresses no hatred for the Vietnamese, explaining simply, "I was fighting because I live in a country where they put you in jail if you tell them you won't fight." His tragic end demonstrates both the cost of violence and the possibility of maintaining humanity even in extreme circumstances. Through these four men, Conroy explores how masculinity can be both inherited wound and chosen path, destructive force and healing presence. Throughout the novel, storytelling emerges as both a diagnostic tool and a healing practice. When Tom begins sharing his family history with Dr. Lowenstein, he discovers connections and patterns he hadn't previously recognized. The act of narration itself becomes therapeutic, allowing Tom to integrate fragmented memories into a coherent whole. As he unfolds his family saga across their sessions, Tom notices how certain themes, violence, loyalty, and sacrifice, repeat across generations, creating a tapestry of inherited trauma and resilience. Savannah's poetry represents another form of storytelling, one that transforms trauma into art. Her published collection, The Shrimper's Daughter, reworks her painful childhood into verse that resonates with readers who know nothing of its origins. The poems speak of salt marshes and tidal pools, using natural imagery to mask deeply personal wounds. Yet Tom recognizes the limitations of her artistic transformation. She made madness attractive, creating beautiful fruit surrounded by flowers that could put the taster forever to sleep on thorns dusted with cyanide. This metaphorical language serves both to reveal and conceal, allowing Savannah to process her trauma while maintaining a protective distance from raw reality. The novel itself enacts this healing through narrative, demonstrating how the act of organizing chaos into story can lead to understanding. By structuring his chaotic memories into a coherent story, Tom begins to make sense of his life. Each retelling brings new insights, as forgotten details surface and connections emerge. When he finally reveals the central trauma of the escaped convicts to Dr. Lowenstein, he experiences a cathartic release that physically manifests in tears and trembling. The burden of secrecy lifts, allowing him to see his family's dysfunction more clearly and recognize patterns of behavior that have shaped their lives. Conroy also explores the dangers of false narratives and the seductive power of reimagining painful truths. Savannah's children's book, The Southern Way, published under the pseudonym Renata Halpern, reimagines the convict attack as a magical tale where animals protect three sisters from harm. The book transforms violence into whimsy, replacing brutal reality with pastoral fantasy. Tom criticizes this beautification of evil, insisting that artists must tell the truth even when it hurts. The novel suggests that healing requires honest confrontation with reality, not escapist fantasy, while acknowledging the human impulse to soften sharp edges of memory. Through multiple examples of storytelling, therapy sessions, poetry, children's literature, and memoir, the novel examines how narrative can both illuminate and obscure truth, ultimately arguing for the therapeutic power of unflinching honesty in confronting the past. Water flows through the Prince of Tides as its central metaphor, sometimes nurturing, sometimes destructive, always in motion. The title itself references both the white porpoise Carolina Snow, the Prince of Tides, and Luke, who becomes a different kind of prince when he leads the resistance against the government seizure of Colleton. This dual meaning emphasizes how the natural and human worlds intertwine throughout the narrative, with water serving as the connecting element. The tides represent the cyclical nature of family patterns and the inevitable return of suppressed memories. Just as the tides retreat only to advance again, the Wingo's buried traumas resurface despite their attempts at denial. When Savannah finally begins to heal, she tells Tom, "Wholeness, Tom, it all comes back. It's all a circle." This cyclical movement mirrors the family's journey through generations of violence and redemption, each wave of memory bringing both pain and possibility for healing. Water also symbolizes transformation and rebirth throughout the novel. After the brutal convict attack, the family literally washes away the blood, trying to cleanse themselves of trauma, a ritual that proves both necessary and ultimately insufficient. The river becomes a recurring site of both violence and salvation. The place where Luke teaches his siblings to fish and swim, where they later scatter his ashes, and where their mother finds her own form of independence through shrimping. Years later, when Tom's father returns from prison, the family celebrates on a shrimp boat in the Wando River, the water becoming a site of reconciliation and new beginnings. The novel's most magical moments often involve water. The white porpoise circling the family's boat in pearl-colored waters, the siblings swimming in the moonlit creek after graduation, Tom running through the rain in New York as he begins to fall in love with Dr. Lowenstein. These moments suggest that water, like memory, can both destroy and heal. The ocean's constant presence serves as both witness and participant in the family's story, its rhythms marking time, its depths holding secrets, and its surface reflecting both beauty and terror. The Lowcountry setting, with its intricate network of rivers, marshes, and tidal creeks, becomes more than mere backdrop. It functions as a character itself, shaping the Wingo's lives through its moods and movements. The water's dual nature, its capacity to sustain life and to take it away, mirrors the complex relationships within the family. Like the tides themselves, their love for each other is both fierce and dangerous, capable of both nurturing and drowning. The Prince of Tides ultimately offers a qualified hope, a belief in the possibility of healing that acknowledges the permanent scars of trauma. Tom's journey through his painful memories leads to a new understanding of himself and his family, though this understanding comes layered with both loss and redemption. Through intensive therapy sessions with Dr. Lowenstein, he gradually unearths long-buried family secrets, each revelation both liberating and wounding. By the novel's end, he has achieved several crucial reconciliations, mending the fractured relationship with his father, recommitting to his troubled marriage with Sally, and helping his sister Savannah find a measure of stability in her ongoing battle with mental illness. Yet this healing comes at a profound cost, both literal and metaphorical. The town of Colleton itself is destroyed, as extinct as Pompeii, sacrificed to government interests and Rhys Newberry's insatiable greed. The destruction is total, not just buildings and streets, but an entire way of life vanishes beneath the waters of progress. The Wingo family's ancestral island, which had served as both haven and battlefield for generations, is sold off, their deep connections to place permanently severed. Luke, the most resistant to change and most deeply rooted in the old ways, dies defending his homeland against what he sees as invasion. His death serves as a stark metaphor for the price of progress. Those unable to adapt are destroyed by the forces of change. Tom's complex relationship with Dr. Lowenstein embodies both the possibility and the price of personal transformation. Their affair, intense and transformative, awakens him emotionally from years of numbness and denial. Through their connection, he rediscovers his capacity for passion, vulnerability, and authentic feeling. However, like many catalysts for change, their relationship ultimately cannot be sustained. It serves its purpose as a bridge between his old life and new understanding, but must end for true healing to occur. When he returns to South Carolina, he carries their connection with him as a secret source of strength and renewal. Each night, while driving home across the Charleston Bridge, he whispers, "Lowenstein, Lowenstein," like a prayer, acknowledging the secret life that sustains him even as he embraces his destiny with his southern family. The novel suggests that meaningful transformation often requires letting go of the very places and identities that have defined us. This letting go isn't just about physical locations or relationships. It's about releasing outdated versions of ourselves, comfortable but limiting narratives, and the safety of familiar pain. Through Tom's journey, we see that real change demands both courage and sacrifice, and that the path to healing often winds through loss before reaching redemption. In the novel's final scenes, Tom describes watching his family reunite on his father's new shrimp boat, a moment heavy with symbolism and emotional weight. His children, products of a different life and different choices, meet their grandfather for the first time, bridging a generational gap that once seemed insurmountable. Savannah's embrace of her father carries years of pain and forgiveness, while Tom's wife Susan, who once knew Henry Wingo only through stories of violence and fear, welcomes him with cautious optimism. The boat itself becomes a symbol of redemption, a vessel not just for catching shrimp, but for carrying this wounded family toward healing. This moment of reconciliation doesn't erase decades of trauma and hurt, but rather suggests the possibility of moving forward with greater awareness and compassion. The scars remain visible, but they've become markers of survival rather than solely sources of pain. The family's gathering on the water, where so many of their stories began, creates a powerful symmetry, suggesting that cycles of pain can be transformed, if not broken entirely. The Prince of Tides ultimately argues that our wounds, whether from geography, family, or history, never fully heal, but can become sources of wisdom and connection. Tom's opening declaration that his wound is geography evolves throughout the narrative into a more nuanced understanding. His wound is also memory. The violent episodes that shaped his childhood, the loss of his brother Luke, the complicated love for his mother Leela. It's family, the intricate web of loyalty, betrayal, and blood ties that bind the Wingos together. It's the inescapable past that shapes him, the poverty of South Carolina's lowlands, the class divisions that marked his youth, the southern culture that both nurtured and confined him. By confronting rather than denying these wounds, he finds a measure of peace, not through forgetting, but through understanding and acceptance. Savannah's cry in the novel's final pages, "Oh, Mama, do it again," resonates beyond a simple moment of joy. It echoes across time, connecting the adult woman to the child who once watched her mother make the moon appear in the water. This moment suggests that even amid trauma and loss, moments of wonder and connection sustain us. It speaks to the persistence of childhood wonder, the enduring power of maternal love, and the possibility of finding magic in the midst of pain. The tides retreat but always return, bringing both destruction and renewal in their eternal cycle, much like the Wingo family's own story of loss and redemption, pain and healing, separation and reunion.